You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. New York, London, Milan, Paris, the fall fashion weeks are over, the newest trends have been declared, and fashion-forward consumers are off to the mall. And the whole cycle will repeat in a few months with the winter, and then spring, and then summer fashion shows. The pace of change in clothing trends has picked up exponentially in recent years. The good news for style-conscious consumers on a budget is that high fashion has gotten a lot less expensive. The bad news is that fast fashion takes a huge toll on the environment. In fact, clothing manufacturing is one of the most polluting industries on the planet. Growing the cotton necessary to make just one t-shirt uses the same amount of water that a person drinks in 2.5 years. Cotton farming accounts for a quarter of all insecticides used globally, and dyeing and rinsing natural textiles accounts for a fifth of all water pollution globally. And then there's the fact that much of that clothing we buy ends up in the trash. In 2018, Americans buried 14 million tons of fabric in landfills. Nick Angelov is an associate professor in the Department of Public Policy at UMass Dartmouth and author of The Dirty Side of the Garment Industry, Fast Fashion and Its Negative Impact on Environment and Society. Nick, welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Nick, you are a professor of economic development, but you actually started your career in the fashion industry, started a business, and you say that even with that insider knowledge, it is difficult to really get a handle on the environmental footprint of clothing. This is something I have heard from others who have tried to dig into this issue. Why? Why is it so hard to figure this issue out?
Because the production process is so complicated and globalized. There's so many links. And the innovators in fashion that have brought us the retail of mass market production that we know today is value retail, which is brands like The Gap and Esprit, brands that we know have many stores easily available to us that put a lot of product on the shelves, product that we all can afford. And then there's the other tier of producers and innovators in the fast fashion industry that are bringing us a much cheaper merchandise. So now there's innovation now with technology. Blockchain technology is something that is happening where a digital ID is being put onto the different components and the different stages of outsourcing and on-contracting. And eventually now the goal with certain innovators that are moving this technology into the fashion industry like Vice and Fazoid is to have a digital circular ID so that folks can trace from the cotton producers, whether they were using a better cotton, they were parts of the Better Cotton Initiative and using a more sustainably grown cotton or organic cotton, to the weavers of the yarn from that cotton and the processing plants that will actually turn it into yarn, to the fiber manufacturers, to the fabric manufacturers, to then the assembly plants, to then the finishing and trimming plants that will actually put the whole garment together. And then we're talking about distribution, whether you're going to have a greener supply chain, whether you're going to fly it somewhere overnight or transport it in a better way, whether you're going to use technology to not have backlogs into your warehouses. So things are moving at a very rapid pace because the industry is so complicated.
Nick Angelov, when we think about the environmental footprint of that huge chain of events that leads to a single simple t-shirt, is it possible to highlight particular steps that create the largest environmental footprint? I mean, obviously, there are potentially very different environmental impacts at different steps of the way. But if we were to look at a t-shirt, is the biggest impact just the carbon footprint of all the different times that things are shipped around the world? Is it the water of growing the cotton? Is it chemicals used in dyeing and manufacturing? Is there any point that seems to have a bigger footprint than the other steps in the process?
The most troubling is the dyeing, the wet processing, dyeing being the culminating of all of them. They still use technology that was developed in the 50s and 60s. They use dyes that are extremely toxic. There's 72 identified toxic carcinogenic elements in the finishing of fabric, even before we're dyeing it, because we're using, in the sizing process, we're using chemicals to kill bacteria, then we're bleaching the fibers, then we're desizing them, we're removing alkali and starch from the process, then we move into the mercerizing, which is continuously dipping the yarn into a base bath and then an acid bath to neutralize it to make it porous. Then we put the plastic covering on them of the PETs, and then we get to the dyeing part. So these are very toxic processes that, of the 72 elements that are identified as carcinogenic that are used in those processes, 34 cannot be treated, period. There's no technology to purify them. So the innovation now is on the forefront to develop cleaner technology. There's even an academic journal called the Journal of Cleaner Production that really publishes a lot of lab-based, now it's still at the lab level, innovation where we can replace mercerizing and we can develop better pretreatment processes and we can develop new dyes like high fixation dyes so that they are not running off in the repeated dyeing processes. Because unfortunately, since we're talking about cotton, cotton is really dye resistant. You have to dye it several times. It just does not like to be dyed.
So, that's ironic, isn't it?
So it's very ironic. First, we got to bleach it so that we get it ready to dye it. And then we have to repeatedly dye it with the heavy metal dyes.
I want to go back to what you were saying about this new fabric and innovations in fabrics and just how difficult cotton is even to just dye. It's by far the most common fabric, but we have seen the rise of so many synthetic fabrics in recent years. And with that, we've seen concern that, oh my goodness, as you wash and dry these synthetic fabrics, they break off little tiny microscopic pieces of plastic that end up in the environment. Maybe synthetic fibers are not the way to go, but I wonder if you kind of look holistically at the whole life cycle and balance the water demands and the pollution inherent in dyeing cotton versus the, essentially plastic production and then potentially plastic pollution from synthetic fibers. Like, is there a better or worse there? Can you try to, it's an apples to oranges comparison, but is one better or worse than the other?
And at this point, sadly, polyester treatment recycling technology is further ahead than natural fiber recycling. At this point, we cannot recycle natural fibers. We can recycle polyester. So we're a little bit ahead in those technologies, particularly with chemical recycling and polyester. And these are complicated processes, but basically they stem back to the basics that polyester is kind of a plastic and you can melt plastic. We won't get rid of natural fibers, right? We just can't advocate as an industry to go straight into petrochemical products, right? I mean, that's like saying, let's just all wear plastic bags from now on, right? They're all going to be made from petroleum. We don't want to do that.
Nick Angelov, recycling, obviously, one part of the equation. But if we just go back to, the old reduce, reuse, recycle, a big part of the size of the environmental footprint of the fashion industry is just the size of the industry. How much is being made and bought and sold and in a lot of cases thrown away every single year? How much has that increased in, say, the past just 20 years?
It's quintupled. And those are conservative estimates.
So it's five times what it used to be.
Five times as much. So there's statistics that I've covered that says kids today are buying five times the amount of clothing that their parents did, than the previous generations did.
I'm going to go home and tell my kids that.
Right. So it's quintupled in a way that when I first started doing research on this, which was around 2010, 2012, was the first conference presentation. My book came out in 2015. The industry has been estimated around $1 trillion. Then it moved up to $1.5 trillion. The latest estimates from BBC were like up to $3 trillion.
What needs to happen on the consumer end of things?
Oh.
Is it a matter of smarter buying or just buying less?
It is a matter of that. The problem is that it's easier said than done. Can you start a conversation with your child about no more back-to-school shopping?
yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? You know, kids are feeling a lot of peer pressure.
A lot of peer pressure. The average consumer that the industry now targets is 12 to 16 years old. When I was a fashion student, that was the mantra of my fashion education. Who's your average consumer? Female, 18 to 24. Who's the next largest consumer? Female, 24, 32. Those were my main demographics. These are the people that I had to worry about to sell them anything and everything from lipstick to accessories to clothing. In this day and age, the first thing that a fashion student learns is, who's your main consumer? Non-gender specific 12 to 16 year old. Boys are consuming just as much as girls. Back to school shopping is a big cultural component for us, right? On average, 2014, we were spending in 1 week of back to school shopping $600 per kid. And out of that $600, less than $200 was spent on real school supplies or non-clothes related items. So $400 per kid just in 1 week. When we're talking about fashion, we tend to think about adults. But then the industry really sells to kids. So we have to get the kids involved.
Nick Angelov is an associate professor in the Department of Public Policy at UMass Dartmouth and the author of The Dirty Side of the Garment Industry, Fast Fashion and Its Negative Impact on Environment and Society. Nick, thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.